Hello and welcome. You're listening to the second episode of the Class Acts Victoria podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Toohey, and today we're talking all things classical saxophone with our special guest from Air Music Australia, Justin Liu. Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So for our listeners, could you just maybe briefly introduce yourself and what brings you here?
Yeah, so I'm Justin. I'm a Filipino-Australian saxophonist and I guess entrepreneur these days. I'm in my second year of master's performance research at UniMelb, which is where we're recording right now. I don't know. What
No, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I should say, especially for our audio-only listeners, we're set up in a really swanky recording studio booth at the moment, courtesy of yourself. Thanks for booking this really cool, it's like a podcast specialty-built studio for recording in the library.
Yeah, I know they have a few in Parkville, and they just have the one here. But Susan Eldridge is the one who
keeps encouraging
people, especially who do like the Ignite Lab program, which is like a professional development program to use this room more.
Yeah.
So I finally get to use it. So
fantastic. I'll definitely have to tell her because I know Susan. We go way back to Brisbane days. So yeah, excellent. I'll have to tell her. So yeah, tell us a little bit about how you started playing the saxophone.
Okay. My parents don't actually have that much music background, but music is pretty integrated into life of like Filipinos. I think a lot of people know that Filipinos like always sing and do karaoke, especially.
Cool.
There's always been music around us, but they're not like musicians themselves or artists. We moved to Australia in 2007. So I was 6 years old, and we had a toy piano, and I was like copying like the Australian anthem and the doorbell, and so they were like, okay, we need to invest in piano lessons. So I actually started on piano, I think, as most people do. And then I started playing the flute because my older cousin who I looked up to a lot played the flute, and then my sister picked up the clarinet, and I was like, that instrument's bigger than mine, so I need to play one that's bigger. So I started playing sax.
Oh, wow.
And then at that point, I started going to the conservatorium high school. And actually, both my piano and my flute teacher told me, like, I think you should stick to sax because you're improving a lot faster. And I think I was, like, really interested in the repertoire of the sax, which, as you said, all things kind of classical sax. Just going to a classical music school, that was kind of the direction I went to, and just happened to be the instrument that I picked up because it was bigger than the clarinet to one up my sister.
Fantastic.
So.
Do you play clarinet at all or just saxophone?
I'll say just saxophone.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think it would be pretty offensive for me to say that I can play clarinet.
And didn't continue with flute either?
No, not since maybe year 10.
Yep.
Yeah, just ended up doing like all sax. And actually even my piano teacher, she became my accompanist.
Yep.
Or she was an accompanist already. And there was one year where we actually used our piano lesson time that the school was paying for to do rehearsals for my saxophone because she was like, I prefer playing sax with you than teaching you piano.
Oh, wow.
But it was really great because we got to play some really cool repertoire.
Yeah. Excellent. Fantastic. And so what about your studies at the Melbourne Conservatorium?
Yeah. So right now I'm doing a research master's, and it's in concert design and concert curation, and it's under the performance stream. I've always been pretty interested in concert design. The head of sax at the Melbourne Con, Joseph Lalo, he's pretty big into concert design. His PhD is in concert curation, and he's done some work for like World Sax Congress and things like this, in organizing those events and, you know, the mega day here too. But even before I knew he was doing that type of research, because I think he started his PhD when I started studying my bachelor's here and he was my teacher, I was already really interested in doing integrating poetry and visual art into my programs. And so, like, for my first year recital, it's just a 20-minute recital, I designed program notes that had some poetry and then some commissioned artworks. And it just kind of helped me to, I guess, connect to the music and develop interpretation and imagine, like, what kind of dynamics or effects I'm playing. And so I kind of kept doing this in my undergrad recitals, and it kind of turned into this research topic now that's about concert design. And specifically, I'm looking into curation in art museums and art galleries with a supervisor from the Buxton Contemporary Art Museum, Dr. Kyla McFarlane. Just trying to see how we can diversify concert experiences in classical music through looking at curation in museums, which has it's been a practice for over 100 years already, so very deep history.
Wow, that sounds really interesting, especially because I imagine forging a path as a classical saxophonist is often quite difficult to do. So yeah, anything to broaden and expand career path is amazing.
I know, like, Ian Godfrey, who's the head of sax before Joseph's teacher.
Yeah.
He, like, comes into class every year and says, like, this is too many people and we don't have enough jobs. Oh. And he's going to switch to clarinet.
Oh, no.
But I think it's good that, like, you know, Joseph's kind of encouraging this type of... because it kind of helps you create your own brand and own voice as a soloist or as an ensemble member if you want to. I think that really helped me now doing some performances like solo and quartet stuff outside of uni. So yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. We actually spoke to our previous podcast guest, Nicole Canham, about being a bit of an entrepreneur. And I think it's great that there's lots of people interested in the saxophone, you know, and forging their own kind of path with it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned a bit of ensemble playing. You're currently playing with the Ocean Saxophone Quartet, is that right?
Yeah.
How did this come about?
So I made Ocean with our alto player. Her name's Iris. And we actually met at the Sydney Con while I was in the Con High School, and she was doing her Bachelor of Music. I think I was in year 10, and she must have been a first year, and we were both learning from Andrew Smith. And we would meet each other outside of the con every morning at 6:55 a.m. to wait for the doors to open.
Wow.
And there's, like, the high school side and the uni side, and there's a door in the middle, and we would practice, like, next to each other, like, starting doing scales. I had, my school started at, like, 8 a.m. back then, so I just had an hour to do scales, and I'm sure she'd practice for, like, 3 or 4 hours back then. So we met, that must have been, like, 2015 or 2016, and then when she finished her bachelor's there, she did her honors at Melbourne Con, and she knew Joseph quite well. She was studying for Michael Duke back then, Yeah, we just got dinner, and she asked me, like, are there any, like, players here that you think we could make a quartet? Because we, being students of Andrew and Michael, like, they have Nexus Quartet, and we always go to their concerts, and it just seemed really fun. And, you know, they just tell us, like, during our lessons, like, oh, I'm going to go rehearse with the Nexus boys now. And, like, they'd watch concerts at the con together, and, you know, their story of meeting at uni. They're all in the same year. Nathan and Andrew, all in the same year at uni, I think. Or maybe Jay was the year above, but going to uni together. Mm. Iris just wanted to try to see if we could make a group like that.
Mm.
And so, we were actually enrolled as a quartet at the uni chamber music. We just asked our quartet at the time, like, do you want to do some external gigs? And then... yeah, we ended up getting 4 people and doing our first concert. It must have been 2023 in January. We actually did 1 concert in Melbourne and 1 concert in Sydney.
Cool.
And I think it went pretty well. And yeah, we've done 4 concerts since then. We started mostly doing, like, standards, like just classical music. And then ever since we did this one project that was called Conversations at a Yamcha restaurant, which was a Asian-Australian composition project at Annam, and Jason, our baritone player, reached out to the composer, Jordan He, to arrange it for sax quartet and piano. And that kind of kickstarted us on the direction of doing more Asian Australian type of commissions and projects and identity type of things.
Amazing, yeah. I've heard you guys play and it's incredible. Oh, like you guys sound very homogenous and like just dialed in and really together, which is not always easy to do in a saxophone quartet. So well done. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
You'll have to record your debut album next.
Yeah, actually, that's a good idea. I should write that.
Yep. Oh, stay tuned for more. So I'm going to say two words to you and I'll get you to tell me what the story is behind it. Cyberbird.
Okay.
What is this?
Okay. Yeah, you're probably referring to the concerto that I just did. I mean, it was August 2024. I got to play with the Unimelb Symphony Orchestra in Hamer Hall, the
Amazing.
Cyberbird. So in 2022, I was in my honors year, and every year they have a concerto aria competition at the Melbourne Uni. It's like open to all, I guess, all degrees and students. And there's a few rounds, so like you do instrument round, so we have a sax round, and then a woodwind round, and then an everyone round.
Yep.
And then, I ended up winning it in 2022.
Wow.
That year was my honors year, and in that year, it's a pretty good year to try to win the competition, because you have to do a concerto for one recital. You just pick one concerto. Mm-hmm. I picked the Cyberbird.
Who's the composer?
Yoshimatsu.
Okay.
Yeah, a Japanese composer. He's still alive.
Yep.
And does lots of cross between like classical or neoclassical with jazz, with rock and funk type of music. And yeah, it's super, super interesting composer, I think. I also like really fell in love with his music, his piano writing. He has like lots of piano etude type of works, and yeah, this like kind of Japanese neoclassical style I've always really liked. Even like in like Japanese films and animes and stuff, you know, the melody writing is just really cool. I mean, this is a piece that I've known of for a very long time. In my honors year, I had to pick a concerto. But actually, like, everyone says that this is not a piece that you can win the competition with.
Because
especially when you're selecting a piece to play in Hamer Hall, I think, like, the Cyberbird, which has, like, a jazz ensemble at the front, is not something that you would normally program in Hamer Hall. But actually, at this time, I really wanted to work on playing happier pieces. Because I think, like, the deeper, sadder French repertoire, like that's like most of the stuff that I was hearing, and hearing something that's like a jazz trio that's like happy and energetic is not a style that came very naturally to me.
Yeah.
And I thought like if I could get this feeling, I could probably like make my audience feel something interesting.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky because I had a really good team. Because I played with Peter Dieger, who's a pianist, and Aditya Ryan Bhatt, who's a percussionist. And Peter works at the Con as an accompanist. But Aditya started first year with me as a percussionist, but studied, now finished at Annam. He did his 3 years, and now is just doing freelance performances with lots of different ensembles, even especially like contemporary music ensembles. Just having this team work on this piece for that much time, and then we ended up like basically reuniting 2 years later to perform it in Hamer Hall, and yeah, it was just a really nice experience doing that gig.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Is the Cyberbird Concerto considered sort of part of the standard repertoire for sax, or not really?
I would say so, but I think the opinion of it in classical sax community is not very high.
Right.
I got a lot of comments that it's not very deep.
Oh.
And uh, yeah, like I yeah. There was actually a lot of teachers who said, like, oh, can you play something else? Because I don't know this that well. Because I guess it's only written in 1996.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty popular, and I really liked it the first time I heard it. Because I know Nick Rossignolo played it with ABC when he won that, I think it's like a Young Virtuoso competition.
Yep.
And when he won it, I was like, wait, this piece can win. So why don't I just do it?
Yeah.
I've always liked Yoshimatsu's stuff. I actually did the... He has a saxophone sonata called the Fuzzy Bird Sonata.
Oh.
And I think it was commissioned after... it was written for Nobuya Sugawa, who's the head of sax at the Tokyo National School of Music. And from what I understand, he wrote this concerto first and then was asked to develop a sonata, like, similar style. And I played this for my audition for Melbourne Con and played it for the first class X competition that I entered, that I ended up winning.
Wow.
And I knew there was this concerto, but then I always heard, like, oh, it's not deep, it's not going to get picked. And then Nick won. So I was like, well, I'm going to do it.
It can be done.
Yeah, it can be done. But yeah, so that was my experience.
Well, you proved the haters wrong.
Yeah, turn your haters into motivators, yeah, you know?
take that. I'm glad you mentioned Nobuya Sugawa, because you recently had a chance to meet him, is that right?
Yeah. So I went to the New Zealand summer school. They have a New Zealand saxophone society there. Really, really nice and talented community. Yeah, it's kind of my first time getting to connect with them. I actually only found this event through Jason, our baritone player, because he's looking to study in Japan soon, like a master's. And he just sent me the screenshot of this event, and he's like, I'm getting tickets because Sugawa was going to be there. And I was like, well, I have to go.
Yeah.
Like, I've been listening to him since I was in high school. I went. Jason couldn't even actually end up going because he got sick. He got very sick.
Oh, no.
Right before the event.
Oh.
That event also said yes to Air Music going there too, so I could represent Air Music there. I got to meet him, Nobuya Sugawa, and watch two of his performances, one in Christchurch and one in Auckland. And I had some lessons with him. I actually showed him my Cyberbird recording, and he said, wow. And
oh,
I,
great.
Like, I'm going to remember that forever. Yeah. So.
Fantastic. Oh, excellent. So you mentioned, hang on a second, I'm just referring to my notes. Yeah, you mentioned Air Music Australia.
Yeah.
Could you explain to our listeners sort of what that is and how this came about?
Yeah, sure. So Air Music is a saxophone equipment brand. They do neck straps, ligatures, and weighted screws. The founder is Professor Kenneth Tsai. And he's a professor based in Taiwan. And he's actually, he learned from Sugawa for a while as well. I met him at the Asia Pacific Saxophone Academy, which is an event in Thailand that Joseph is on the staff for. And he takes a group of students, the uni financially supports as well us to attend. I first went to that event in 2019. And then COVID hit, and I went again in 2023 and 2024. And Kenny is one of the teachers there, and yeah, so he always has a stall there. And basically in 2024, I offered him if we could distribute in Australia, because it was such a popular product, like everyone was waiting for us to go to APSA to bring them back Air Music stuff, and we couldn't find it online since 2019. I had built a kind of a media team here by then, who was also, I brought them to APSA that year to be the media team for APSA. So I told Kenny, like, okay, we can advertise and my quartet can put on concerts and I can get in contact with stores because, like, I'm also originally from Sydney and I'm now studying in Melbourne. I think there's a lot of people who would be interested in trying and buying this product. And, you know, there's not many options for ligatures and neck straps here, especially in this price range. In Asia and maybe Europe and America, definitely there's a lot, but we always struggle to get equipment here in Australia.
It's the same in the clarinet world. There's a few really big key brands that they're just really hard to get a hold of in Australia, particularly.
Yeah, definitely. And luckily he just said absolutely yes. And so I was on a we were on a trial contract. Basically I had to make Air Music Australia as the distributor in Australia for this brand. And so we were on trial from November and we just started the official distribution contract in February.
And things are going well so far?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the best thing that's happened so far, I'll name two good things that happened so far. So, like, when we went to New Zealand, a bunch of people just ordered them, and I just shipped them out, a bunch of them out from that event. So that was really good. And just getting their messages being like, so excited to try this, like, never seen a neck strap that looks this nice before. Yeah, that's like what the feedback they've been giving. But I walked into the Melbourne Con sax class, and maybe one third of the people were using Air Music, like neck straps or ligatures. So I don't know, that made me pretty happy because I think people were looking for them for a long time but just couldn't get their hands on it. And it's not really that I'm like even that attached to like, oh, that's my product. It was more just like these are people who are looking for an equipment that suits them, and now they can actually get it. That was kind of the accomplished feeling I got. So, yeah.
With the neck straps, is it because they're really comfortable or functional? Like, what's the selling point of them?
To be honest, I think the biggest selling point is how they look.
They look nice.
Yeah, but they are really comfy. And actually, on a practical level, a reason why that I switched was because, so I used to use the Jazz Lab, and they're really comfy, and I think like 100% you will never get a neck or shoulder injury from them. But for me, it put the instrument a bit far away from my body.
Yeah, they've got this bit that kind of sticks out from your
Exactly.
sternum.
Yeah, and some teachers pointed out because they haven't seen Jazz Lab before, but very popular in Australia. That it actually shifts the angle a little bit of the instrument, which makes a more open sound, which I think can be good sometimes. I still have my Jazz Lab. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that now. I'm joking. But yeah, I still have my Jazz Lab. But I think, like, with the neck strap design, the saxophone should be entering your mouth at a little bit of an angle. It can cause a little bit of biting to get a homogeneous sound if it's a bit too high. So this is like a big thing I've been telling people who are testing that there's also like an ergonomic element to it. Because I think like cushioning, a lot of neck straps have cushioning. I guess those would be the three key reasons why I'd be using these. But to be honest, everyone uses them because they look nice and there's three different colors, so people can also like fight about which color is the best and things like this.
Well, one thing's for sure, like when it comes to neck straps, it's something that a lot of people perhaps don't consider. They just use whatever came with their instrument. But you can really notice when you have a bad neck strap. You know, you start to get shoulder pain or neck pain or it's rubbing, you know, on your skin. And then you put on a good neck strap. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, I never knew playing could feel this way. Because it's the same. I use the Jazz Lab XL for bass clarinet if I play standing up. And it's the same thing. You want to have the angle of the neck just right for your mouth pressure, and yeah, it can cause problems.
Yeah, definitely. I guess another thing about these neck straps is that they have the metal bar, and this also like contributes to the look, but it I feel like this actually just helps customizing the height and the weight distribution a lot too. I just find it really comfy. I use it for soprano, alto, tenor. I don't play baritone, so all saxes that I play, I use it for those things. So yeah.
Amazing. What about the Air Music ligatures? What can you tell us about those?
So I actually didn't know how much of an extensive range they had until I became a distributor, because I just used their most recent model, which is the X1. I think it's a 2021 or 2022 model. Someone described it recently as a H model. So like it's basically like two very thin rails and then just a thing connecting it. And these ligatures, or this type of ligature, is meant to have very little contact with the reed and mouthpiece to give a natural resonance. And I think especially in the Asian schools like Taiwan and Japan, they're very big on this. Like even mouthpiece patches, they try to go as thin as possible so that it doesn't dampen the feeling on your mouth or any of this type of thing. And so, yeah, this one, I bought my first ligature in 2023. And actually, like, I used to get very injured because I use very hard reeds to get a very big sound. And I practice a lot as a soloist, so this is very important to me. Don't do much ensemble or orchestral playing. So it's just like, just make a big sound and you'll be good. That's like how I learned, right? And so I use like 3.5 reeds. I use a very heavy setup. I use an Optimum AP3. It's a Van Doren ligature. But I was getting a lot of jaw pain. A lot of the time it went down to my neck and shoulders. The injuries, I went to like music specific physios. And yeah, it was just like a very heavy setup. And I actually stopped playing for about 7 months in 2023, at the end of 2023. Mostly I was doing research, so it was a good time for me to take a break. And then when I returned back on my instrument, I already had the X1 ligature by then, but I heard Kenny telling me like actually with ligatures that have less touching, you can go softer reeds and actually have more control for the same projection. So I really focused on this. I went all the way, not all the way, but I went to size 3 reeds, which I'd never played size 3. Like I was always on 3+ or 3. Mm-hmm. And I just focused on, you know, not tensing anywhere and just blowing air, and it made a really horrible sound for a while. But I actually still just play size 3 reeds now, even in Hamer Hall, and I could fill that whole hall. And I really do think the ligature and maybe also the mouthpiece made a very big difference. So yeah, that is my preference on the X1. But yeah, they also have a model called the F1, which is the one you tested actually, that you said maybe is similar to the Ishimori.
Yeah.
And this one has a little bit more contact with the reed, so it gives a bit more of a focus sound. And then the last one, we have the Honeycomb ligatures, which is actually, I like to say it has characteristics of both, like somewhere in between. But as a model, it's actually quite just our version of the standard ligature, just with the honeycomb shape to also integrate some of the design that's like less contact with the reed. Yeah, and all of the ligatures come in gold and platinum material, which means you can have a bit of customization to your sound. The platinum's a bit more forward, bright, strong, and the gold is a bit more smooth, and good for maybe blending and chamber music and things like this.
Yeah, incredible. Just for our listeners, just so you know, I had a chance to play test a bunch of these ligatures last year at one of the other Classax testing events, and I did actually manage to try the soprano sax ones on E-flat clarinet, the alto sax ones on B-flat clarinet, and it's either the tenor or the baritone, I can't remember, baritone one on bass clarinet. So they do work, they do fit, although they're specifically designed for saxophones. But yeah, I found them great. Like they all played really, really well, very similar to my Ishimori ligatures that I play on all three. And yeah, the different platings were really interesting. They make a subtle difference, but
yeah.
I think your description of them was perfect. Yeah. And it's funny, after that day that I play tested them all, I intended to go home and write down all my thoughts and have, you know, maybe write a bit of an article for the magazine.
Oh.
And I completely forgot to write it all down. So I'm going to have to play test them again, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there an opportunity that we can do that?
Yeah. So the upcoming afternoon tea event between Class X and Air Music, we'll provide pastries. My sister is a pastry chef, so we'll be making the pastries.
Sounds delicious.
And my parents love organizing afternoon tea events, so they're going to be like giving like soft drinks and tea and coffee. And yeah, we'll have all the equipment there for people to test if they want. And buy as well. So yeah, that's on April 12th, a Saturday, in Ormond, Anglican Church.
Fantastic. I'll have all the details and we'll link it up in the show notes and things. Justin, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you want to plug at the last minute? Any upcoming gigs or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. I have one... it's a BPM artist concert. So BPM is my music studio. We focus on doing media for musicians, but we have a few artists that we collaborate with. So a few of our artists are doing a combined concert on April 25, Friday, that's on Anzac Day, in St. John's Malvern East. And then I have a tempo rubato concert with Peter DeJager. On May 15th, it's a Thursday night at 8 p.m. All of the details you can find on, I have a link tree, and it's on my Instagram as well. It's Johnston2202, spelled a bit weirdly. So that's my...
No worries. I will get all the details. We'll put it in the show notes. People can check it out. And yeah, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really looking forward to this upcoming Air Music Class X collaboration.
Yeah.
And I'm going to playtest all the ligatures, all the neck straps. I'm going to write a big article, review everything. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much for this.
No worries. Thanks again. You've been listening to the Class X Victoria podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Toohey. Make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you like the video, hit the bell so you get notified when our next episode drops. Next episode will be back in the land of clarinet, but I'm not going to tell you who our special guest is just yet. I'm going to keep that as a surprise. Hopefully it'll be released shortly. I'm hoping to keep these episodes fairly regular, but we'll see how that goes. Justin, thank you again so much, and we'll see you soon.